And go to our website at WUSB.FM for the full schedule. Go to the left side of the page and click Concert Billboard. Take you right there. Go and enjoy the shows. This is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, WUSB.FM.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. That was great. Thank you. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Yes, you're listening to WUSB, and it's time now for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Back live in the studio for the first time since, I guess, November. Well, we've been back for little snippets, but mostly it's been travel programs the last couple of months. And we'd like to know what you thought of those travel programs. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, or call us today. Yes, we'll be taking phone calls today. So you may speak live on the radio waves and be forever archived in the off-the-wall section of 2600.com. It's amazing, the kinds of things that we're able to collect and archive over the years. And I thought some of what we heard over the last few weeks was really interesting, too. I mean, I went through it myself, such as riding on the metro in Kiev, which we did last week. And boy, was that loud. But I didn't really remember the whole experience. I remember some of it, but I didn't remember all the things that we did. So it's good to kind of archive things and go back and look at it again. We got a bit of mail on last week's show, actually. More than any of the other ones, I think. Because we asked some pointed questions about the metric system. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But here we are on a Tuesday evening in what is probably the most embarrassing winter I think I've ever experienced. It's just, it's sad, it's pathetic, it's horrible. I've lashed out on the other radio station about this, too. And, of course, to anybody I see on a daily basis, you know how I feel about these warm temperatures in the middle of winter and December and January and now February. You know, it started off so promisingly. In October, we had a snowstorm. It was snowing right before Halloween. And I thought, yeah, you know, this is going to be the winter to mark all winters. This is the one. Last winter was pretty good. I was away for a lot of it, but it was also snowing here. It was snowing when Kyle and I went to Scandinavia. And you know, you must like winter if you go to Scandinavia in December. And not only did we go to Scandinavia, we went to northern Scandinavia. Granted, it was inside the Gulf Stream, so it wasn't quite that severe temperature drop, but still, there was snow on the ground, and it stayed there. And that's what winter should be. And I have such problems with people that burst out in sunshiny voices saying, oh, what wonderful, beautiful weather we're having. It's January 20th, and it's 70 degrees outside. I got news for you, pal. That's not beautiful weather. That's messed up weather. That's not supposed to happen. And I just hope the day comes in mid-August sometime when there's a frost at night or maybe even some snow during the daytime. And I could just waltz over to you and say, oh, what beautiful weather this is. And see how you like that. Every action has an opposite and equal reaction. Just remember that. And while it may be ridiculously warm outside for the last few weeks in winter, the day will come when maybe the Earth will break away from its orbit, like on that Twilight Zone episode, and things will get really, really freezing all the time. And then I'll have the last laugh. But, you know, I haven't lost hope yet. It's still, what is it, February 7th? Of course it's February 7th. It's Mark Twain's birthday. Not Mark Twain's birthday. Charles Dickens' birthday. Why do I always make that mistake? Oh, my goodness. Although, you know, you never really did see the both of them in the same place in the same time. But, no, today is Charles Dickens' 200th birthday. Had he lived, he would have definitely gotten the call from President Obama and probably a number of news stories about him. But he didn't. Didn't make it, but he would have been 200 today. And imagine all the stories and movies he would have made that he never made, because he actually died at age 58. Can you believe that? 58. There's so many people, like Kafka, they die so young compared to what we're used to today. Of course, Kurt Cobain died young, too. John Lennon died young. So the tradition continues, but you just kind of think that someone like Charles Dickens was like 95 years old when he finally kicked it, but no. And just imagine how much more he could have done. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. There's just so much to go over. It's been a while. It's been a long time. And we have all kinds of adventures and experiences and things to share. I just did something for the first time. I never did this before. Now, you know about the whole Starbucks thing, which took place over many years and finally came to an end last summer or spring, whenever that was, and I went out to California and went to the first, as chosen on this radio station, went to the first Starbucks of my life. And that was an amazing experience. It really was. Very emotional. And I've been to a bunch of them since then, but I've never been to the one in this building. Yeah, this one right down the hallway. Same floor, everything. And I went there for the first time. And I just can't believe people stand online for so... I had to actually get here a half hour early so that I could make sure that I was able to get a cup of coffee in time before going on the air. And that was really kind of an interesting experience. And the thing is, and nobody that I know, that I have met yet, by instinct, gives out a different name than what you're asked for. Yeah, they ask for your name. It's kind of weird. You know, you say what you want. They write it on the little cup because they assume you want to take it away. And one thing we learned, if we brought anything to this saga of Americana, and thanks to Kyle for enlightening us on this, you don't have to get that plastic cup. You can get an actual real cup, but you got to ask for it. And I think they're all required to do that. I didn't try it here because obviously I had to get down the hallway. Although I guess I could have tried to sneak a China cup out of the... anyway, regardless, I didn't. And so what they do is they write your name down on the plastic cup. But it doesn't have to be your name. It could be anyone's name. It could be anyone's name. And when someone asks me my name, and they're a stranger, and I'm not talking to them about something that involves my real name, such as my telephone account or my credit card or something like that, there is something in me that just kicks in. It's an instinct that says, okay, Emmanuel, lie. Do not say any of the names, yes, any of the names that are associated with you. There are a few. And I have no trouble doing this. People say, oh, it's wrong to lie. No, it's not wrong to lie to a complete stranger who doesn't know any different. It's wrong to lie to a friend. It's wrong to lie to somebody who is trusting you. It's not wrong to lie about something that makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. So, telling the person down the hallway at Starbucks that my name was Fernando was not a problem at all. Felt good, in fact, especially when they called out for Fernando and I responded. And everybody looked up. And it's just an example of the fun you can have in day-to-day life. You don't have to just subscribe to the drudgery and just do the same thing over and over again like everybody else. Nah, mix it up a little bit. Give out those fake names. Tell long stories. Whenever I get my hair done, it does happen occasionally. It doesn't just happen by itself, you know. It needs some maintenance sometimes. But you know how the hairdressers or barbers or whatever you go to, they always feel compelled to get into these long, epic conversations about your life, their life, people's lives they know of, celebrities, sports teams, interplanetary expeditions, whatever is on their mind. The time that you're spent under their scissors as a captive audience, you've got to sort of either be extremely rude and tell them you don't have a vocal cord or something, or you have to play ball. You have to be part of this conversation. And so I have no trouble when they ask me all these questions, just making things up, making up the most incredible story. Wartime correspondent over in Ghana, or someone who could have been in the major leagues if it wasn't for that knee injury. Or, you know, wife and kids back home, and Johnny's just learning to read now, and it's good, he's in freshman year in college, and it's about time, and things like that. You can just go on and on. It's sort of like a test of your abilities. How long can you keep it up for? Can you catch yourself before you contradict yourself? How sharp are they? There's nothing wrong with this. In fact, it's even good because you're making their lives more interesting by telling them good stories. And I think Charles Dickens would be the first to say, tell a good story. Yeah, people tell stories all the time. Why is writing a book not considered lying? I imagine some alien races wouldn't understand this if they came to Earth and asked, why are people lined up to watch people lie on these big screens inside these auditoriums? Well, it's called entertainment. It's called fiction. It's called telling a story. Not always the truth, but embellishing the truth a bit, making things up. So there's no reason why you can't do that yourself. Now, of course, if you tell complete falsehoods to people that you see on a daily basis and you're just going to mess with their heads and they're never going to know if you're telling the truth or not, that can complicate things. That can cause serious trust issues. But for people you're probably never going to see again, or maybe might not see for a long time, or people who might see hundreds of other people before they see you again. Well, that's just entertainment, as far as I'm concerned. All right. It's incredible. Sometimes you notice something, and sometimes it just passes right by. And today being Charles Dickens' 200th birthday, I guess I noticed that. I just heard about it, and wow, that's epic. I mean, we've all read Dickens at some point. I hope we've all read Dickens. You know, I made an assumption here. I assume people in the audience, A, read, and B, read things that matter. And, you know, Oliver Twist, David Copperfield, Tale of Two Cities. Okay. Now, that's one of my favorites. Now, listen to the opening. These are the first words. Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. What? Do you want to read it? Okay, go ahead.
It was the best of times. Mm-hmm. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom.
Good, good.
It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief.
Epic.
It was the epoch of incredulity.
Incredulity.
It was a season of light.
Mm-hmm.
It was a season of darkness. It was a spring of hope. It was a winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way.
In short, oh boy.
The period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities insisted on its being received for good
or for evil
in the superlative degree of comparison only.
How about that? Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was me at age 11. How do you like that? And I think, you know, that might explain why I got beaten up all the time when I was a kid. You know, instead of being outside playing football, I was inside not only reading Charles Dickens, but reading Charles Dickens aloud into a tape recorder. Yeah. Explains a lot, doesn't it? And boy, what a voice. What pronunciation. Okay, you know, it took a lot of guts to to share that with people. Yeah, a lot of memories come back from... I used to read so much more when I was that age than I do now. What does that say? And I think I'm not the only one that can say that either. So I guess, you know, not being outside, not playing football kind of leads me into this weekend. Of course, the Super Bowl happening yet again and the various things that brings to the forefront. Well, yeah, okay, the Giants, the champions again. Okay, big deal, parade down Broadway. All kinds of fun. And, you know, it also brings to mind all the craziness that this game always brings up in my mind. I don't understand it. I really don't. You know, it's why it's called football, I don't get that either. There's very little foot action except for running. It's mostly throwing. And I think they could make it a lot more interesting. And a lot less timeouts and slow motion movements. I mean, did you see the end of this game? There was 1 minute left, and the person for the Giants, I'm sorry, I don't know names, very bad with names. I just notice things, but I don't really write down the names. But the person who was running to score the touchdown didn't want to score the touchdown. In fact, he tried not to. Look at this play. It's amazing. He basically just kind of falls down, but he falls down over the goal line. And apparently, the reason for that was if he had been able to drag it out a little bit more, they could have played out the clock. And any game where you play out the clock, I think is lame. I think it's, you know, it's just not the way things should be. You should be able to simply do anything in the time that's left and not take advantage of having fake plays or falling down or just wasting time. But the thought was, you know, if they actually scored the touchdown, the other team, the New England Patriots, let them score the touchdown. I could not figure that out at all. How do you ever let a team score But their thinking was, okay, we're going to let them score. They won't be ahead by more than a touchdown, and we have a full 59 seconds to get across the field and score the winning touchdown. Now, of course, 59 seconds in a football game is actually like 10 minutes. Another thing I have a real problem with. Now, in soccer, 59 seconds is 59 seconds. And they don't stop that clock unless there's something really serious going on. Whereas in American football, they're stopping the clock all the time for commercials, for timeouts, for changing players on the field. And it's just ridiculously slow. You get a play, okay, and you recuperate from that play for the next 5 minutes, and you have another one, and just bizarre things happening. And it was exciting, I'll say that. It went down to the last second, and had that guy caught the ball that the other guy threw, then they would have won at the very last second. That would have been interesting. But I just think the games where there's always action, or where there's infinite possibilities like baseball, are far more interesting. So, those are the feelings that I had watching that. Very bizarre seeing somebody not wanting to score and being allowed to score because of some crazy tactic that almost worked. And then just the usual silliness that goes with the event itself. And here's the weird thing. This was the, 46th Super Bowl? Okay, it's the only time we ever use Roman numerals, so people have to sort of learn that. Yeah, we've given up on the metric system, but we're going to hold on to the Roman numerals. That way we can figure out what year a movie was made and know what Super Bowl it is. That's really the only use I think we have left with Roman numerals. But here's the weird thing. Super Bowls, for some reason, I don't understand why they do it this way either. They always plan out where it's going to be before the game is decided. I guess I can sort of understand this, because it's a big deal, because people make reservations and fly in from all over the world, and they have to know where they're going. So you can't have something that that is decided a week or 2 weeks beforehand. And it's only one game, it's not a playoff series. Fine. I just think they go a little overboard sometimes. They always pick cities that are warm. Now, football, American football is a game that supposedly can be played in any temperature, so why not have the Super Bowl be played in some cold city occasionally? It's only fair. How come the southern cities get all the fun? Well, it's probably because people won't spend as much doing touristy things if they're in Detroit or something like that. Kind of shows you where the emphasis is being placed. Not so much on the game, but on the business. So that right there kind of bugs me. The other thing that's weird, this is just strange. Do you realize that in all 46 years of the Super Bowl, not once has either team playing belonged to the city that they were playing in? In other words, they just played in Indianapolis. And what is it, the Indianapolis Colts? Is that who it is? They keep moving teams around. It was the Baltimore Colts, now it's the Indianapolis Colts, and the Los Angeles Rams, and now the St. Louis Rams. Can't keep up. But they've never had a team. The Indianapolis Colts certainly weren't in the Super Bowl, and it'll be in New Jersey, actually, in 2 years. First time ever there, and that's a pretty far north city, so they're finally, after 48 years, they'll be making a bit of a change and moving north a little bit. But I guarantee you that neither the Jets nor the Giants will be in the Super Bowl then, because apparently it just never works out that way. And the odds will never be better, because two teams with the same stadium. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. Oh, I can keep going. Why is it that the Giants or the Jets are considered New York teams when they play in New Jersey? Why is the parade in New York City? Why isn't it in Secaucus? They have some very nice streets there. They can have a parade. I just think if you have a team, it should play in the state that it's identified with. Or close to the city. I know Secaucus is close to the city, but it's a different state. So it should be a New Jersey thing, not a New York thing. Just my feeling on that. Now, in addition to all of the craziness involving the actual... And by the way, there's a much bigger event going on. involving football. No, not American football, regular football. And that's the Cup of Nations, which nobody's following. It's the third biggest football tournament in the world, next to the World Cup, next to Euro, which is taking place later this year in Ukraine and Poland. This is the Africa Cup of Nations. And I've actually been following this, although I have not been able to find a single game televised anyplace, even on my Canadian system, because nobody apparently cares. But it's kind of interesting looking at the scores and seeing who's upsetting whom. Looked like Equatorial Guinea, one of the host nations, might have actually made it beyond the quarterfinals, but no, they didn't. In fact, it seems quite inevitable that it's going to be Ghana versus Cote d'Ivoire, the two highest-ranking teams in Africa. Don't know why Cote d'Ivoire gets to say their name in French, and every other country in the world has to say it in a different way, but that's just the way it is. Anyway, the final will be taking place on Sunday. Semi-final, I think, tomorrow, so we get to decide, or we get to find out who's going to move forward. I'm rooting for Zambia, actually. It's Zambia, Mali, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ghana, but everyone pretty much assumes it's going to be Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, but you see, it's there's more than just the NFL going on out there, but since that's all anybody's been talking about, why not focus on the rest of the craziness that was happening, such as the commercials? Interesting commercials. I had this on in the background. I was interested because it's a phenomenon. You know, it's something that people talk about, and sometimes history is made. And it's good to have some kind of cultural relevance, even if there's not much culture going on. Did you catch the halftime commercial that Clint Eastwood was part of? It's a Chrysler commercial. And I thought it was interesting, just the tone. It was called Halftime in America. It actually happened during halftime in the game. And this is, I have the script here. This is what it said in Clint Eastwood's voice, with various scenes of America in the background. It's halftime. Both teams are in their locker room discussing what they can do to win this game in the second half. It's halftime in America, too. People are out of work, and they're hurting. And they're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared, because this isn't a game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything, but we all pulled together. Now Motor City is fighting again. I've seen a lot of tough eras, a lot of downturns in my life, and times when we don't understand each other. It seems like we've lost our heart at times, when the fog of division, discord, and blame made it hard to see what lies ahead. But after those trials, we all rallied around what was right and acted as one, because that's what we do. We find a way through tough times, and if we can't find a way, then we'll make one. All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done, and what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again. And when we do, the world is going to hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America. And our second half is about to begin. Well, okay, there you go. Clint Eastwood there with his Chrysler commercial. Now, of course, there are a few things here that bug me right away. First of all, the thing that astonished me is that he's being accused by the far right now of being overly political, and somehow this is a pro-Obama thing. I don't see that. I don't get it. I don't understand that logic. I see this as a pro-corporate America thing. Maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. That kind of is blinded to what's really going on. Detroit came back. Does anybody know about this? I have not seen evidence that Detroit came back. That Detroit is anything more than what looks like a bombed-out city with lots and lots of vacant shells of buildings and pothole-ridden streets and not very many people. And it could be so much better. It could be a lot better. Imagine just turning over Detroit to all the people who have lost their homes and giving them something to start over again and build new houses in all those streets that don't have anything and construct a city from the ground up, from people that really want that. You ever ask yourself, well, you know, here's an abandoned square mile of urban landscape where absolutely nothing exists. Who owns that? You know, and God forbid some people from an Occupy Wall Street movement decide to take that over. It's the worst thing in the world. What a threat to our society. We've got to move in with all our troops and horses and whatever else and lock these people up because we can't have them doing that. The logic just simply defies them. But getting back to the commercial, apart from wondering what exactly it is that they're pointing to, that's this amazing turning point, kind of disturbing for those people that are supportive of America to say that this is halftime. This is halftime in America. Well, that means that, when did we start this thing? 236 years ago? So you're saying, Clint Eastwood, that in the year, 22-something, 236 years from now, it's going to be game over for America. Because this is halftime, all right, and now we're going to have another couple of hundred and change years, and then game's going to be, I guess we could have sudden death after that, but that doesn't sound good either. How dare you put some kind of time limit on our country as if it were a football game? I'm shocked. I am shocked. But he's not getting any criticism for that. No, he's getting criticism for apparently supporting Obama for some reason. But yeah, okay, that was one commercial. It was kind of interesting seeing that. But there were others too, quite a few others. Don't have time certainly to get into all. I saw one. Did anybody see this one? It was a car. Okay, car commercial. That doesn't narrow it down, does it? There was a Volkswagen. There was a Fiat. I think this one was a Toyota commercial, and it was kind of subtle, but really kind of cool. They were talking about reinventing things, reinventing all kinds of things. And I think what I started out with was reinventing a couch, which all of a sudden, we've reinvented this couch. This guy's walking through his apartment, and instead of a couch, it's all these scantily clad women, I guess in the shape of a couch or something like that. You know, your typical Super Bowl, football, Sunday beer swigging, sexist illusions. Scantily clad females. Oh, yeah. Oh, right on. And then the announcer said, this also comes in a male model. And all of a sudden, you had scantily clad males forming a couch. And the same guy would walk through his door, instead of recoiling in horror and homophobia, gave an approving nod, too. In other words, yeah, that's cool as well. Happened in just a second. Most people probably didn't even notice it. And that is a step. That's a step where you don't have to make it a big deal, where you just say this is part of life. And I think that was kind of cool to see that actually happen. And there are others. There are other commercials, too, some good, some bad. I'm not going to spend any more time on it. But one of the other things that did happen was, of course, the halftime show with Madonna. I thought it was brilliant. I thought the music was simply incredible. That the choreography, and all the marching people. You had a marching band. You had gospel singers. You had must have been 1,000 people on stage at one point. And it just flowed together really well. And I thought Madonna was in top form. But of course, what's everybody focusing on? They're focusing on MIA's middle finger. Yeah. Oh, my God. Think of the children. Think of all the horrors that they're going to have to endure because they saw something like that. Both NBC and the NFL issued apologies to viewers of the February 5th broadcast of the Super Bowl halftime show. It was not Madonna, but a featured performer who went overboard this time. An obscene gesture from MIA slipped into the broadcast. Now, you know, I don't get how a middle finger... Yeah, I know what a middle finger means, but how is seeing a middle finger offensive? Having one directed at you, I suppose, might insult you a bit. But it's not the same thing as uttering an obscenity, even though I think that's not a big deal. But, yet we feel the need to blur out the image, even though we all know what a finger looks like. And what about in England, where it's actually two fingers means the same thing? And I won't get into the etymology of all that. We'll talk about that for hours. But there are all kinds of symbols, all kinds of gestures. It's just a gesture. But everyone's flipping out over this. You know, it says more about us than about anybody who made a gesture, that's for sure. So NBC's Christopher McCloskey said, "We apologize for the inappropriate gesture that aired during halftime. It was a spontaneous gesture that our delay system caught late." NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy said, "The obscene gesture in the performance was completely inappropriate, very disappointing, and we apologize to our fans." You know, it's okay to see two guys crash into each other at full speed, giving each other concussions, all this violence and bone-cracking play on screen. That's okay. That's acceptable. Permanent injuries, head injuries. People carried off the field on stretchers and paralyzed. It's part of the game. But that middle finger, oh my God! How are our kids going to deal with that? I mean, imagine, you have kids, right? And they watch a football game and they see all this violence. Then they run outside and they emulate all that. And you're cool with that. You're cool with them doing that because, hey, it's America. But then you see somebody give a middle finger and you're just petrified that your children will emulate that. Giving somebody the middle finger. And you have to stop it. You have to stop that because that's every parent's nightmare. So, yeah, supposedly Madonna's mad at this, too. She's supposedly furious with MIA for giving the finger at the Super Bowl performance. The Paper Plane singer joined Madonna on stage as a guest vocalist. And Madonna was not impressed. She prides herself on professionalism. She did nothing similar in rehearsals. Nobody knew she was going to pull this stunt. But according to a second source, MIA, whose real name, by the way, is Madhangi Aruprakasam. Yeah. She got carried away and acted on adrenaline. The source said she wasn't thinking. She was caught in the moment. She's incredibly sorry. Can't we just let it stop there? You know, if we even have to pay any attention to it at all. Okay, got a little over-enthused there. Made a gesture. Big deal. I didn't take it personally. Even though she was looking straight at me when she did it, I didn't take it personally. In fact, I didn't even notice it. And I remember during the whole Janet Jackson thing, I was just watching the halftime show on TiVo, and I saw something happen. I said, wow, that's interesting. I rewound it to see if I saw what I think I saw. And I said, oh, yeah, that's kind of different. I wonder if anybody else noticed this. And then I hopped online to see if anybody else had noticed it, and it was like 9/11 all over again. Incredible. Okay, you know what? I've talked of a storm here. What I like to do is go into delay, which we haven't done in a while, so forgive me if I'm a bit rusty, and then see if anybody's still out there who might want to talk to us. Our phone number is, what is it? It's been so long, hasn't it? 631. It is still 631, right? Okay, 631-632-9872. Okay, that's 631-632-WUSB, for those of you who have letters on your phones. And we'd like to hear what you've been up to, or maybe your feedback on anything we've been talking about, or maybe some new subjects. And, okay, can we go into delay? We're going to go into delay and pray that everything works.
Professor K from Fishbone, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook. Listen. Professor K from Fishbone, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook.
And here we are in delay. Hey, that worked kind of smoothly, didn't it? Doesn't always, I'm sorry, I stepped on Fishbone a little bit. But, yeah, okay, we do have phone calls. We do have some phone calls, so let's see if we can get the phone to work. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel, this is Boston from Bulgaria.
How did I know it would be you? You know, I don't think you're coming out over the, this just does not get fixed, no matter what we do. Just speak up a little bit more.
What?
Okay, I think you're only coming through the phone, which means you're coming through very far away. I don't think you're coming through the actual board.
I don't know if the delay is here yet for me to tell you.
No, the delay is not there. Okay, I think you're coming through now. I think, all right, I've got you. So, how is Bulgaria?
Well, we're in Eastern Europe where it's been the worst winter for years.
Okay, I got to stop you right there. Now, you said worst winter, meaning the coldest winter. And I think that would mean, a very appropriate winter. But, you know, I hear that there has been a lot of devastation as a result in Ukraine, especially where we just broadcast from last week. Temperatures of minus 30 Celsius, people dying in the streets, horrible, horrible stuff there. And that should not be happening.
You're not going to have another of the summer we spent in Ukraine shows tonight with regards to the people dying in the streets all over Europe,
but
Ukraine especially.
That said, I would like to experience cold temperatures of that nature to see just what minus 30 is like. But, of course, be prepared for this kind of thing. It speaks volumes that people don't have a place to go and that such tragedies are taking place.
Yes, and happy 200th of Charles Dickens to you.
I'm sorry?
Happy 200th birthday of Charles Dickens.
Oh, yes, and you as well. I imagine since you do a lot of reading, I gather, that Charles Dickens is somebody that you will have read up on.
Well, I can't say I've read up. I've read some of his stuff. It was funny, when you played that recording of a kid reading from Tale of Two Cities,
uh-huh.
The first thing I thought was, that might be Emmanuel as a kid.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't get very many 11-year-olds to agree to read Dickens on the air.
It shouldn't be too complicated, but when I heard the voice, it reminded me of you somehow, and it turned out it was you.
I'd like to know what similarities there are in the speech patterns then and the speech patterns today. And I even seem to have an accent of some sort. It was really bizarre.
Up on it, I guess.
I'm sorry?
There were enough similarities for me to pick up on it, I guess.
Yeah.
That way. I don't know.
I wonder if I would have gotten along with myself. You know, that's one of the reasons why I like to capture things of the past and compare them in the future. And I think people should do that more, because are you the same person you are now that you were then, and how have you changed, and where are you going?
Or worse, or whatever. Yes, that's a good idea.
Uh-huh.
Another thing, that's the Clint Eastwood thing, the car had from last Sunday.
Yes.
When you read the script, at some point I thought they cast it wrong for some reason. I think with the boxing references and all that, what's his name? Sylvester Stallone would have been a better.
Yeah, but that's too much reading for Sylvester Stallone. I don't think he would have made it through. That's nasty, I know. He's actually very good at...
Clint Eastwood actually read it. He could say the lines, being an actor or some such. It's,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I hope it's true what they say about Detroit, but I'm afraid not as...
Not from what I have heard. I have not visited Detroit in a while, because there's really no easy way to get there through mass transit.
Well, I know of some people who are trying to get things done there differently, better, worse, better than they are, such as the lady Grace Lee Books, I think her name is.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, things do need to change. Things do need to be updated.
And she's one of the people who I think is going, making things change as much as she can.
Uh-huh.
In the past few years, or from what I've heard.
Okay, listen, we're going to move on. We have other phone calls, but it's good hearing from you again. And please, stay warm there. What's the temperature now?
It's 9 Fahrenheit, minus 13 Celsius.
Okay.
Which is good, because it's cold enough for it not to be snowing, as it was the whole day.
Well, it's good to be on that side of it, where it's too cold to snow, but here it's too warm to snow, and hopefully we'll meet in the middle someplace.
I don't like it when it's above 60 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, not in the winter. That doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
All right, Pops, great hearing from you as always. You take care.
Thank you.
All right. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, Emmanuel, very nice to talk to you. How are you?
Pretty good. And who is this and where are you calling from?
I'm Brian from West Babylon, and I actually talked to you on the radio New Year's Day of 2000, because that was after Y2K.
Uh-huh.
I remember you were on the radio when it was...
I did a morning show, didn't I, on WBAR then?
Show, yeah, it was New Year's morning, and we were just happy to have lights and power and computers functioning and all that.
We were all amazed that we were still standing, and nobody could understand what happened to make us get through the night.
Yeah. So,
good times.
Anyway, I agree with you about the weather situation. It is alarming. I mean, we're obliterating temperature records. It's funny to me, because I mentioned to somebody the other day, you know, they said, nice day. And I said, well, this is climate change. And they go, are you a believer? And I'm like, well, it's science, you know. But anyway, another person who died young and much younger than I had expected was George Orwell.
Oh, yes, of course.
At 46.
Uh-huh.
Which, of tuberculosis. And
right after writing 1984, too, I believe.
Probably pretty soon after that. But I'm reading now a great book he wrote called Burmese Days,
mm-hmm.
about British imperialism. He was born in India and served in the British Army in Burma and wrote about it. That book is fantastic, Burmese Days. And another thing I'll just mention is Detroit is not isolated to a single area. It's everywhere.
True.
Long Island, we can see abandoned stores and abandoned places, and upstate New York, factories that have been abandoned for years. So it's not isolated just to Detroit. It's throughout our country, and we do have to really take a look at why we cannot take these resources and put them to constructive use. And it's because of the system that is, a capitalist system that is in the control of such a few people. And the mass of people are just like wandering around looking for some meaningful work, and it's a very infuriating situation. So,
well, there should not be a situation where you have all these abandoned buildings and you have all of these homeless people. The two are made to meet, and if the land cannot be used for something commercial and somebody has simply made bad decisions, such as the many strip malls that exist around here that are completely vacant, that should be turned into something for people that have no homes. You know, it seems like an obvious solution there.
Yeah.
And that creates jobs. People have to build things, but it's evolution of a sort.
But you know, I hear, you know, there's like this like Gingrich and even Huntsman in the Republican debates were talking about doing things to try to boost real estate prices again. You know, like that. Give middle-class people that own homes, you know, some hope. Are you going to regain the equity that's been lost in the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication of that happening. So there has to be some real recalibration of our expectations. And we have to consider the plight of people that are in desperate need and support for, you know, the people that, have really basic human needs.
Absolutely.
I support the Occupy movement, and we occupy Patchogue on Saturdays, and there's lots of people doing, getting ready, I guess, for the spring in New York.
Yes, I hope the spring really brings something positive and something that will grow quite a bit throughout the entire year. The Occupy movement is certainly not going away.
Yeah. Do you ever listen to the Jimmy Dore show?
I don't think so.
Check it out. It's a very funny internet radio show. It's Jimmy Dore, D-O-R-E. I think you would like it.
Okay. Well, in some of my free time, I will try to do that. Thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Good night. Now, you know, here's we're talking about change. We're talking about the need for change. And we have this inability to change. There was an interesting article in the New York Times about the Constitution, how the United States Constitution used to be something that so many countries throughout the world wanted to emulate. And back in 1987, in fact, Time magazine said this, of the 170 countries that exist today, more than 160 have written charters modeled directly or indirectly on the U.S. Constitution. And now, today, the picture is very different. The U.S. Constitution appears to be losing its appeal as a model for constitutional drafters elsewhere. That's according to a new study by David S. Law of Washington University in St. Louis and Mila Versteeg of the University of Virginia. The study will be published in June. Its authors coded and analyzed the provisions of 729 constitutions adopted by 188 countries from 1946 to 2006. Among the world's democracies, they say, constitutional similarity to the United States has clearly gone into freefall. Over the 1960s and 70s, democratic constitutions as a whole became more similar to the U.S. Constitution, only to reverse course in the 1980s and 1990s. Now, there are lots of reasons for this. And here's the reason, the real reason. The U.S. Constitution is terse and old. It guarantees relatively few rights. Now, the commitment of some members of the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution according to its original meaning in the 18th century may send the signal that it is of little current use to, say, a new African nation. And the Constitution's waning influence may be part of a general decline in American power and prestige. In an interview, Professor Law identified a central reason for the trend, the availability of newer, sexier, and more powerful operating systems in the constitutional marketplace. Nobody wants to copy Windows 3.1. How's that for an analogy? In a television interview during a visit to Egypt last week, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the Supreme Court, agreed. She said, "I would not look to the United States Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. She recommended instead the South African Constitution, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, or the European Convention on Human Rights." See, here's the thing. Other nations routinely trade in their constitutions wholesale, replacing them an average of every 19 years. And, by odd coincidence, Thomas Jefferson, in a 1789 letter to James Madison, once said that every constitution naturally expires at the end of 19 years, because the earth always belongs to the living generation. And that's our problem. We're stuck in the past. We can't change. We can't evolve. And we need to. Otherwise, maybe it is halftime. And finally tonight, this is a story that's quite disturbing. We're seeing indications from U.S. statements that Israel is planning to attack Iran probably by around April. We're kind of saying this like, all right, this is definitely going to happen. Why? Because, well, Iran's just, they won't stop developing their nuclear program. In fact, they even launched a satellite into orbit. And we all know the technology to launch satellites into orbit is the same as launching a missile. So they can't do that either. They can't go into space. They can't develop nuclear technology, whether it be for energy, whether it be for weapons. They're not allowed. Now, when did I miss this? When did I miss when Israel and the United States adopted Iran as a child and established curfews and rules? I'm not a big nuclear proponent or a proponent of any kind of war or weapons or things like that. But treating one nation as if they have to listen to a different nation, because that nation has more power, more arms, more might. That's wrong on a level far beyond any wrong that we're accusing them of. And if it actually comes to that, if it comes to Israel just launching an attack on a sovereign nation because they don't like where they're going, how is that any better than the things that we're supposedly afraid Iran is going to do? And boy, if that does happen, it's going to be interesting. Because I guarantee you, a lot of the world, a lot of the people around here are not going to take Israel's side. And it just seems like we're doomed to go down the same road over and over again. That's it for us tonight. OTW at 2600.com. Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Good night.
Come, you masters of war. Here they build the big guns. Here they build the death planes. Here they build all the bombs. Here they hide behind walls. Here they hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when a fast bullet flies. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes. And I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's the one thing I know. I'm younger than you. That even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I'll follow your casket by the pale afternoon. I'll watch while you're lured down to your deathbed. And I'll stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.